Welcome to the deep dive. So today we're tackling something that's, well, it's a huge and frankly expensive challenge for basically any organization that has moved to the cloud.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking about securing your data in Microsoft 365 and Azure. And this isn't just some abstract technical issue, is it? It's a major financial risk.
It really is. The stakes just keep getting higher. I mean, our sources on this are pretty stark. The average cost of a single data breach in 2024, it's running at about $4.5
million. $4.45 million, that's a staggering number.
And that alone should be a wake-up call.
And it seems like the attackers are getting smarter, too. They're specifically targeting these cloud environments now. Microsoft 365 and Azure are, you know, the new prime hunting grounds.
They are. And the speed is what's terrifying.
Yeah.
Ransomware that targets the cloud went up by 67% in just the last year.
67%.
Which really brings us to our mission for this deep dive. We need to talk about what we call the cloud edge.
Okay, the cloud edge. Let's define that.
It's that that super vulnerable perimeter where everything meets your on-prem systems, your remote workers, all those third-party apps, and then your cloud services. It's a huge, messy intersection.
So that old idea of building a big wall around your headquarters, that's just gone.
Completely obsolete. The perimeter didn't just move, it dissolved. Your traditional firewalls and antivirus, they just aren't built for this.
So what we've done is we've gone through stacks of analysis to really distill this down. We've got five critical layered steps for defense.
Right. And this is about the architecture, not just a list of products.
Exactly. We're talking about the zero trust strategy, using tools like Microsoft Defender and Azure Sentinel, and really hardening that infrastructure. This is the Y print. So let's get into it.
First thing to really internalize is that the cloud edge is just. It's fundamentally different from any network we secured before. It's fluid.
It's not static.
Not at all. It's distributed and it's constantly expanding. I mean, think about it. Every single employee laptop, every mobile device, every new cloud app you connect, it's a new entry point that needs protection.
And the targets themselves inside that Microsoft ecosystem are massive. You've got Microsoft 365 on one hand, which is basically a centralized vault for all your most sensitive data.
All your email, financial documents, customer records. It's a treasure trove for an attacker.
And then on the other side, you've got the huge complexity of the Azure infrastructure itself.
Yeah, that's everything from your virtual machines and databases to custom apps. And this is crucial. Our sources show again and again that misconfigured Azure storage containers cause some of the biggest breaches.
And these aren't super sophisticated hacks, are they?
Not usually. Yeah. A lot of the time it's something simple, like a permission error or, you know, a developer leaving a test environment exposed to the internet by mistake.
That's a huge point. Simple errors leading to massive breaches. It also shows how the attackers have changed their game. They're not just trying to smash through a firewall anymore. They're slipping through the cracks, right? Stealing real user credentials, abusing accounts with too many permissions.
We call them cloud-native attack patterns. An attacker gets one user's passwords, logs in, and just looks around for what that user can access. An old firewall doesn't see that as an attack.
It just sees a normal login.
Exactly. It's a silent killer, slips right past those traditional defenses.
And imagine on top of all the direct damage, the compliance pressure here must be just immense.
It is, especially in regulated industries. If you're dealing with healthcare data under HIPAA or consumer data under California's privacy laws, a breach isn't just costly. It can be a business-ending event.
Okay, so this reality demands a completely different strategy, which brings us to step one, implementing a zero-trust architecture.
Yes, and the core idea is actually pretty simple.
Never trust, always verify.
That's it. You grant zero implicit trust. It doesn't matter if someone is physically inside your building or not. You verify everything, every time.
So if zero trust is the strategy, then identity is the new perimeter.
Identity is the new perimeter. And that means you have to make strong multi-factor authentication, or MFA, mandatory, no exceptions. And we need to move past the simple SMS text codes.
Towards things like biometrics or authenticator apps.
Right, much more secure methods.
And that verification process then feeds into what's called conditional access. This is sort of the smart policy engine, isn't it?
It is. It looks at dozens of signals all at once. Is the user in a normal location? Is their device healthy and patched? What's their sign-in risk score? It checks all that before granting access.
Can you give us a practical example of how that works?
Sure. So let's say you're logging into your email from your company laptop in the office. Conditional access sees everything as normal. Access is seamless.
Okay.
But then Say you try to download a highly sensitive financial report from your personal tablet while you're traveling in a new country, conditional access sees that as higher risk.
And so it steps in.
It steps in. It might require you to go through extra verification steps, or it might just block the download entirely. It applies security based on the real-time context.
That makes a lot of sense. But what about the day-to-day friction? Zero trust also relies on the principle of least privilege.
Right. Users only get the bare minimum permissions they need to do their job.
Including administrators, right. Using things like just-in-time access so even they only get elevated rights for a short period, doesn't that create a ton of admin overhead?
It creates some, yes, but that friction is intentional. It's a security feature. The potential cost of a compromised admin account, someone with the keys to your entire kingdom, is so much higher than the few minutes it takes to request temporary access.
You're shrinking the blast radius if an account gets compromised.
Precisely. It's a strategic necessity, not an optional extra.
Okay, so zero trust is the strategy. Step two is having the right integrated tools for the job, which means really leaning into the Microsoft Defender platform.
Right. And its biggest strength is that it's all integrated. It's one unified platform for your endpoints, your email, your identity, and your cloud apps, not a patchwork of different tools that don't talk to each other.
Let's break that down. First, there's Defender for Endpoint. This is way beyond old school antivirus, right?
Miles beyond. It uses behavioral analysis and machine learning to spot weird activity.
Right.
But the key is its automated response.
That speed is everything.
It is. Defender for Endpoint can spot a malicious process starting and then automatically isolate that device from the network and even roll back the malicious changes.
All within seconds.
Within seconds.
Yeah.
It stops lateral movement in its tracks.
And then for that huge email attack surface, we have Defender for Office 365. The source material called out a couple of really critical features for stopping phishing.
It did. Two in particular are worth remembering. The first is safe links.
Time of click protection.
Exactly. Even if a bad link gets into an email, when the user clicks it, Defender rescans it in real time and can block it if the site has become malicious.
And the second one, safe attachments, seems even more important for new malware.
It is. Safe attachments basically takes any risky file and detonates it. It opens the file in a secure, isolated sandbox environment away from the user's machine to see if it does anything malicious.
So it tests the bomb before it gets to you.
That's a perfect analogy. And then you have Defender for Identity, which watches your Active Directory for weird behavior that could signal stolen credentials. Things like someone logging in from New York and Tokyo 5 minutes apart.
The impossible travel scenario.
Right.
So we've built the wall with zero trust and we've armored the endpoints with Defender. Now we need the brain of the operation, the intelligence center.
And that's step three, leveraging Azure Sentinel. This is your cloud-native SIEM.
A SIEM, a security information and event management tool. Why is that data aggregation piece so important here?
Because attacks are never one single event. An attacker might try a login on M365, fail, then pivot to an endpoint, then try to access an Azure storage account.
And in isolation, those little events might not trigger an alarm.
Exactly. But Sentinel pulls all that security data from M365, from your firewalls, from your endpoints into one place and analyzes it together. And only then do you see the full attack chain.
It's the difference between seeing one puzzle piece and seeing the whole picture. The analytics to process all that data must be incredibly powerful.
They are. Sentinel has built-in rules for Microsoft's own global threat intelligence. But the real power for you is creating custom rules with something called Kusto Query Language. Or KQL.
So you can ask really specific questions about your own environment.
You can. Things like, show me every time a user accessed our sensitive HR files outside of business hours from a high-risk country. That's a high-value question you can't easily answer otherwise.
And it's not just about alerts, it's about automated response, too.
Correct. Sentinel uses what we call SOR capabilities. That's security orchestration, automation, and response. These are playbooks that automatically take action.
Like disabling a compromised account?
Or blocking a malicious IP address, or forcing a password reset. It happens automatically the moment a threat is detected. It cuts down that human reaction time, which can make all the difference.
Okay, that brings us to the foundation of all of this. Step four, securing the Azure infrastructure itself with layered controls.
Yep, you can have the best monitoring in the world, but if your foundation is weak, you're building on sand. And security here starts with identity control.
Azure Role-Based Access Control, or RBAC.
Exactly. It's about being incredibly granular. You give a developer rights to deploy code to the test environment, but never, ever to the production databases. You give out keys only to the specific rooms people need.
So if RBAC is about who gets the keys, how do we stop people from building insecure rooms in the first place? That's where those misconfigurations happen, right?
That is the job of Azure Policy. Policy is like the building code for your cloud. It enforces security baselines. For example, you can set a policy that says any new storage account must have encryption enabled if a user tries to create one without it.
The deployment just fails.
It's blocked. It catches those simple devastating errors before they ever become a vulnerability.
And what about the networking side of things?
We use two layered tools. First, network security groups, or NSGs, they provide micro-segmentation. They're like locked doors inside the building, so if one virtual machine gets compromised, the attacker can't easily move to another one.
And then the Azure firewall itself.
That's your main guard at the front gate, providing smart, centralized filtering for traffic coming in and out of Azure. And maybe most critically, we use just-in-time VM access.
To reduce the attack surface.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
It keeps those management ports, like RDP and SSH, closed by default. They only open for a limited time when an authorized admin specifically requests access. It just shrinks the target to almost nothing.
Okay, we've covered the full stack, which brings us to the final piece, step 5, continuous monitoring and incident response, because this is an ongoing process, not a one-time setup.
It's non-negotiable. You have to assume that eventually prevention will fail. The goal then becomes minimizing how long an attacker is in your network. That means having documented incident response playbooks for every scenario.
Ransomware, data theft, a compromised account.
All of it. So that when a crisis hits, you're not making it up as you go. You're following a tested procedure.
And testing is key. Regular vulnerability scans, penetration tests.
Absolutely. You have to find the gaps before the attackers do. And we can't forget the human element. Security awareness training, simulated phishing campaigns. Because at the end of the day, human error is still the cause of most breaches.
Let's tie this all together for a second. You mentioned earlier how terrifyingly fast cloud ransomware can be. It can encrypt thousands of SharePoint files in minutes. How do you even fight that?
It's a huge concern. And it's true, the speed is an advantage for the attacker. But, and this is the critical counterpoint, a properly configured cloud environment also enables faster detection and automated isolation.
So the cloud gives speed to both the attacker and the defender.
If the tools are set up correctly, yes, the response can be just as fast as the attack. The challenge is getting Sentinel and Defender configured and operational beforehand.
And that seems to be the real hurdle, not a lack of tools, but a lack of proper, consistent implementation.
That's it, exactly. The tools to prevent overly permissive storage or excessive admin rights, like Azure Policy and RBAC, they're all there. It's the consistent application of those tools that separates a secure organization from a vulnerable one.
So to recap for everyone listening, the shift is clear. The old perimeter is gone. Securing your Microsoft 365 and Azure data really depends on a full adoption of zero trust principles layered across those 5 steps: identity, defender, Sentinel, infrastructure controls, and continuous monitoring.
And I know for a lot of people, the idea of building a 24/7 security team to manage all this seems, incredibly expensive.
Especially for small or mid-sized businesses.
Right. But the analysis actually shows that using a managed security service can give you that enterprise-grade monitoring at somewhere between 40 to 60% lower cost than building your own specialized internal team.
That's a huge cost difference. But what about the trade-off? If you outsource the security monitoring, aren't you losing that deep organizational context, that knowledge of what's normal for your business?
That is the crucial tension point. You're absolutely right. The managed service brings the 24/7 coverage and the high-end threat intel. But the risk is they lack context.
So it has to be a partnership.
It has to be. The service provider has to work hand in glove with your internal IT team to customize those KQL rules and SR playbooks we talked about. The technology brings the speed, but the organization has to provide the context.
That's the strategic approach. We started this off by talking about how AI and machine learning are just essential for modern threat detection. They can analyze data volumes no human team ever could.
They completely revolutionize the speed and scale of detection.
But I want to leave you with one final thought from our research to really consider. While the AI is handling the data, human security expertise remains absolutely essential.
Yes.
And why is that? Because you still need humans to investigate the complex alerts the AI generates. You need humans to make those critical final response decisions in a crisis. And maybe most importantly, you need humans to constantly refine those detection algorithms based on your unique business context and what they're seeing in the threat landscape. Security in the cloud isn't just about the technology. It's defined by the human strategy that wields it.